From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! We go live to the Czech Republic, where thousands have gathered to protest the meetings of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Also on the home front, protests in 50 U.S. cities. But first to Yugoslavia, where the elections have taken place, still, though, no results. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Many Peruvians have breathed a sigh of relief that Vladimiro Montesinos is no longer in their midst, but some worry the president, Alberto Fujimori's feared spy chief, may continue to wield power from his refuge in Panama. Experts on Peru's military warn that Montesinos could use his control of the army to block efforts to strengthen democracy in his homeland and help Fujimori dominate the country's turbulent politics from behind the scenes after he steps down in July. Opposition demands continue to grow for an explanation from Fujimori for his decision to allow Montesinos, one of the most reviled men in Peru, to flee prosecution in a bribery scandal. Panamanian officials said he was allowed in after they were told Peru's military would launch a coup if he were turned away. Montesinos was accused of masterminding a campaign of smear attacks and dirty tricks to assure Fujimori's victory this year to an unprecedented third five-year term. But Fujimori's foes contend Montesinos is guilty of greater crimes than corruption and dirty tricks. They charge he transformed the once minor National Intelligence Service into a Gestapo-like secret police to oppress the regime's opponents. This news from the Czech Republic. Some 5,000 activists gathered outside the joint meeting of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank early today, chanting "Stop the economic terror now" and waving banners saying "Make love, not trade." The protesters are setting out to spoil the opening of the annual meeting of the two big global leaders who've become prime targets of those who see economic globalization as a menace to humanity. And Yugoslav election officials failed to release results from this weekend's presidential vote again today, heightening fears that incumbent President Slobodan Milosevic is trying to overturn what appears to be an overwhelming opposition victory. The opposition yesterday gave a Wednesday deadline for the State Election Commission to release the results of Sunday's election, or they would proclaim their own candidate, Vojislav Kostunica, the winner. The opposition has accused the government of stalling while Milosevic tries to manipulate the results, either to declare himself the winner or force a runoff vote on October 8th. And speaking of presidential rallies, this past weekend, Ralph Nader, the Green Party presidential candidate, drew more than 12,000 paying supporters to a rally in Seattle on Saturday night, a turnout that far exceeds daily crowds drawn by the major party candidates. The event was the third in a series of Nader super rallies that have been drawing some of the largest crowds of the presidential campaign, though almost no media coverage in the national media. Nader drew 10,000 people in Portland, Oregon last month, and Friday night in Minneapolis, he spoke to an estimated 12,000 people, the largest rally of the 2000 race outside the national conventions. The National Corn Growers Association said it supports Kraft Food Company's voluntary recall from grocery store shelves of taco shells suspected of containing a type of corn not yet approved for human use. On Friday, Philip Morris Company's Kraft Food Unit, the biggest U.S. food manufacturer, recalled all Taco Bell Home Originals taco shells after it said lab tests showed the presence of corn-carrying starlink, a type of Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT corn, not yet approved for human food markets. corn linked with Starlink BT, produced by Aventis, has Environmental Protection Agency approval for use in feed and industrial uses, but approval for food use is still pending tests on whether it may contain allergens for some people. The genetically modified corn was designed to kill insects. And OPEC is holding its second summit in 40 years. It's holding it in Caracas, Venezuela. On the brink of collapse when oil prices plunged 2 years ago, the newly energized Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries has regained an assertive role in the global economic stage. Chavez defied world opinion in August by becoming the first head of state to visit Iraq's Saddam Hussein since the 1991 Gulf War. Chavez is the president of Venezuela, hosting the OPEC summit. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. The opposition candidate in the Yugoslav presidential election claimed victory over Slobodan Milosevic in elections. We go directly to Belgrade, Yugoslavia, where one of the few foreign reporters is standing by. He's Democracy Now! Correspondent Jeremy Scahill. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Jeremy.
Thank you, Amy.
Can you tell us what's happening today on Tuesday, 2 days after the presidential elections in Yugoslavia?
Well, the Democratic of Opposition of Serbia just held a press conference moments ago, and they said that they have tallied 97% of the votes. As I said yesterday on the program, representatives of all of the political parties running for the presidency in this country had representatives at the polling stations. Each of those parties is individually tallying the votes and is releasing figures as they get them. The Democratic Opposition of Serbia says that they have tallied 97% of the total votes cast, and they say that what the results show is a clear and decisive first-round victory for Vojislav Koštunica, the opposition presidential candidate. They have him with 54% of the vote for the presidency. That would mean that there would be no second-round runoff because Koštunica would have surpassed the 50% mark to win in the first round. The Democratic Opposition of Serbia says Milosevic won only 34% of the vote. We've heard little from the ruling coalition in the past 24 hours. The last we heard from them in any official sense was the statement yesterday by the General Secretary of the Socialist Party, that's Milosevic's party, Gorica Gajevic. She said that with 37% of the votes counted, Milosevic was ahead by a margin of 45% to Koštunica's 40%. In the meantime, Ljubica Ristić, who is the head of Mira Markovic, Slobodan Milosevic's wife's party, the Yugoslav United Left, he conceded yesterday on state television that the ruling coalition had indeed suffered a sweeping defeat in municipal elections, particularly in Belgrade. The Democratic Opposition of Serbia is claiming to have won 105 of the 110 seats in the Belgrade City Council. Now, this does not come as any sort of a shock. Belgrade has always been an opposition city, as has the second-largest city, Niš. They've always been controlled by the opposition, but analysts here say it is significant that the ruling coalition is conceding defeat on the municipal level. What we're seeing right now is the ruling coalition seems to be in a scramble, according to opposition activists, as to what to do, given the fact that Kostyanitsa's victory is apparently so overwhelming. According to the figures of the Democratic Opposition of Serbia, the ruling coalition would have to commit voter fraud in excess of 400,000 to 500,000 votes in order to sway from a Kostyanitsa victory to a Milosevic victory in the first round. Now, one of the things that we're monitoring very closely is the fact that the country's Federal Election Commission has yet to release any official statistics on the results of the election. They have 72 hours to do that from the close of the polls. So that means that by Wednesday at 8 p.m., that's tomorrow at 8 p.m. Yugoslavia time, the Federal Election Commission would, by law, have to release the figures. The Democratic Opposition of Serbia last night at a rally made clear that if the Federal Election Commission does not issue those results and does not proclaim Vojislav Kostyanitsa the new president of Yugoslavia, that they will take to the streets of Belgrade, that Vojislav Kostyanitsa will address a massive rally tomorrow in front of the federal parliament, and that they will declare him the new president of the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. Opposition members of the Federal Election Commission, the Federal Election Commission in Yugoslavia is made up of 28 people. There are two from each of the coalitions vying for power in the country. The remainder are appointed by the government, which means that the majority of the people on the Federal Election Commission are appointees of the ruling coalition. But those opposition members on the Federal Election Commission say that they have been going up against a, quote, wall of silence. They say that they are just sitting around asking what to do and that they have no access to where the computer results are allegedly being calculated. So right now there is a lot of anticipation as to what's going to happen with the Federal Election Commission. There is speculation that what Milosevic's ruling coalition is planning to do is to create a situation that shows Milosevic winning by a slim margin, but just below the 50% mark, thus making it a reality to have a second round runoff between Vojislav Kostyanitsa and Milosevic. Almost every poll in the country shows that if there is indeed a second round, Milosevic would lose overwhelmingly in the second round election between himself and Mr. Kostyanitsa. Somewhere in the ballpark of 70% of the people have told pollsters that they would vote for the opposition candidate, Vojislav Kostyanitsa.
You're listening to Democracy Now! Correspondent Jeremy Scahill in Belgrade, Yugoslavia. We're also joined on the telephone by Novak Gajic, who is an anti-government activist and political scientist in Yugoslavia. We just got news, Novak Gajic, about the House passing a bill, I think, that would give another something like $100 million to the Serbian opposition. We already know from Washington Post expose that the U.S. government is giving something like $77 million to the opposition, not clear exactly directly to the parties or to the NGOs that support those parties and labor unions and so-called independent media. What effect is this kind of money having?
Well, actually, the exact figure in the latest bill is $500 million. $55 million will go to the support of, as they say, anti-regime and dissident groups in Serbia. $50 million will go to Montenegro to, as they say, support of political and economic reforms and processes that are allegedly going on there. And it is not yet clear what will happen with what is the rest of the money meant for. And anyway, the question here is why is the U.S. government giving such a big amount of money to the Serbian opposition? One way to think about it is that the U.S. government is determined to get rid of Slobodan Milosevic and his regime. The fact that the announcement of giving this money is given in such a lousy way, the $77 million announcement was given just 2 days before the elections, and it makes some people here, and I'm among them, pretty much hesitant and in thinking what is really the aim of the U.S. government. People here, because of the bombing that happened last year, do have strong, not anti-American and not anti-Western feeling, but definitely people here do not have any good feelings about the U.S. government. Announcement of that kind of aid is, it could be expected that it would provoke very negative feelings of the Serbian population for the Serbian opposition. And that makes me hesitant. What is really the aim of the U.S. government? Do they really want to get rid of Slobodan Milosevic, or they do need another pariah, another Saddam Hussein or Kim Jong-il now in Europe? And why would they need another dictator who is supposed to be menace for the rest of the free world? Why do they need him in Europe? The presence of U.S. troops in Western Europe now 10 years after the Cold War ended is not sustainable as it was during the Cold War. At this moment, we have tens of thousands of American military on the territory of former Yugoslavia, mainly in Bosnia and in Kosovo, the southern Serbian province. So Milosevic is a good excuse for the presence of U.S. troops in Europe now.
We're talking to Novak Gajic, political scientist in Yugoslavia. He is in Belgrade right now, as is Jeremy Scahill. I guess the question isn't so much why is the U.S. pouring money in. I think that's pretty clear. But Jeremy Scahill, the question is why are these opposition groups accepting that money, especially making them vulnerable to the charges of Slobodan Milosevic that a foreign government is intervening in the elections, something that here in the United States the government does not allow?
Well, the first thing that has to be said is that though the opposition parties have united in somewhat of an unprecedented manner to mobilize against the government of Slobodan Milosevic, these forces are by no means a wholly united body. On the one hand, you have the presidential candidate, Vojislav Koštunica, who has been clearly anti-NATO, not just during the bombing of Yugoslavia last year, but for much of his public career. He's been very critical of particularly the U.S. policy toward the Balkans. He himself has repeatedly publicly declared that he will not take any Western money. Now, that's not the case of other members within his coalition. In fact, I had a startling statement that was made to me by one top Democratic Opposition of Serbia official who told me that 500 civilians killed in the bombing of Yugoslavia is, quote, not that much. Some of these parties are people who are very, very close to NATO and very, very close to the United States and Western Europe. I'm speaking particularly of Zoran Djindjic, who is a well-known figure here. He's head of the Democratic Party in Yugoslavia. This is someone who was traveling abroad at the time of the NATO bombing, meeting with Western officials. So when the Milosevic government attacks the Democratic Opposition of Serbia as being NATO servants, they don't really have a leg to stand on with Vojislav Koštunica, but they certainly have a leg to stand on when they talk about people like Zoran Djindjic and the Democratic Party. Now, where a majority of this $77 million has gone thus far that we know about is to so-called non-governmental organizations, somewhat of an ironic term, that are supporting the opposition movement against Slobodan Milosevic. The money has been used to purchase fax machines and mobile phones. In fact, it's been used to conduct polls, some of which are being conducted by the same firm that President Clinton has used. The other thing is that I spoke with someone from a non-governmental organization which is receiving not only U.S. government money, but Western European money, and she told me that this, quote, crude notion of sovereignty is over. So you do have people that are blatantly and shamefully pro-West, if the term is appropriate. On the other hand, you have groups that say, look, we don't have any other source of money, and we're going to take it from wherever we can get it. International capitalist, in fact, the capitalist, George Soros, has poured millions upon millions of dollars into Yugoslavia. And one of the things that that this has contributed to is a disintegration of progressivism within Yugoslavia. This is not an uprising against Milosevic. These are not revolutionaries that are in the streets. This is just a critical mass against the government of Slobodan Milosevic right now. The Western money that's being taken by these groups is largely not being taken with a grain of salt. People are taking the money from wherever they can get it.
Jeremy Scahill, we have to go now, and we're going to be spending the rest of the program looking at the protests that are taking place in Prague right now in the Czech Republic. You see any connections between what's going on in Yugoslavia right now and next door in Prague?
Absolutely. The connection is very clear. The Democratic Opposition of Serbia, their economic program, is being mapped out by a very pro-Western economist group here called G17. And the head of G17, Mlađan Dinkić, is very, very clear, clearly one of the front runners in the race for who will be the country's economic minister. He has already been dealing with the World Bank and the IMF. he intends to present a letter of intent to the IMF on December 15th. They very clearly are going to increase the role of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank in Yugoslavia, what we would refer to as a neoliberal agenda. So as thousands upon thousands of people hit the streets of Prague to protest against neoliberalism, to protest against the IMF and the World Bank, if the opposition wins these elections and they are able to take power, we could very well see Yugoslavia heading in the direction of a system that's at the center of the protests in Prague. And I'd just like to bring in Novak Gajic just at the end here to have him respond, given that he has spent a lot of time studying Central and Eastern Europe and the post-Cold War world, what his views are on the prospect of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank coming into Yugoslavia in the event of an opposition victory. Novak.
Novak Gajic.
Well, now, 10 years after the Cold War ended, we see the devastating results of IMF and World Bank policies towards the countries of the former Eastern Bloc. And I'm afraid we can expect the same thing to happen here. But the point is that Yugoslavia has been devastated by this regime. The regime destroyed the essence of the Serbian economic system. And I don't see any other plausible resource of starting the economic system working without foreign aid. There are other resources. The regime took billions of dollars out of the country. And now, I mean, that money belongs to this country. Now, we do expect that Western governments will press their banks and as well as the banks of other countries to bring that money inside inside the country. But I'm afraid that this process will last long, and I'm also afraid that the whole amount of money taken out of the country, stolen from the people, will not come so soon. The point is that foreign aid now is necessary, and Yugoslavia and the new government of Yugoslavia, we have no other choice but to accept the terms of IMF and the World Bank.
Novak Gajic, I want to thank you for being with us, political scientist and Yugoslavian anti-government activist. Jeremy Scahill, Democracy Now! Correspondent, both speaking to us from Belgrade, Yugoslavia. We'll have further reports tomorrow. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Next up, we go to the Czech Republic, where thousands of protesters are on the streets protesting the IMF and the World Bank. We'll also be going to Washington, D.C., where people are getting arrested as we speak. Stay with us. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. As we go now to the Czech Republic, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank have begun their 55th annual summit in Prague today, with participation from more than 15,000 bankers, executives of multinational companies, and finance ministers. About 5,000 people marched along the only road to the Congress Center where the meetings are being held. They've brought the road to a halt, and the groups are presently in a standoff with police, and it's there that we'll go now with Prothap Chatterjee. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Prothap, Democracy Now! Correspondent in Prague. Prothap, can you hear us?
I'm actually in a small side street called Setkova, just off of the Congress Center, and I'm actually sandwiched in between about three rows of police with dogs. There was an armored personnel carrier that just drove past. And for the last hour or so, we've been tear gassed, and there have been water cannons to chase protesters who have tried to storm the barricades and go over to the Congress Center. Right now, there's a standoff on this side of the bridge, and people are dancing. It's quite a sight to see. There are people dressed in pink and silver, and they're dancing in front of cops as the cops move slowly backwards and forwards. It's like a little dance. Over here in Prague, as the Congress Center is blocked off and people cannot enter or leave unless they're escorted by the police.
Well, can you tell us who is there? Who has come in and where have they come from?
There's about 5,000 people here, and they've come from all over Europe. Yesterday I was at the Convergence Center, which is a gathering space, and they have a place called Pankova out in the suburbs of Prague. And it was a really mixed group of people from all over Europe. In one room, for example, you'd find 150 people talking in Polish, planning their strategy for today. Walk over to another corner and you'd find 500 people from Yabasta, an Italian group, and they're making their plans. And then walk over to another group, they're groups from Britain, from the Netherlands, from Belgium, from Sweden, from Norway, from Finland, from Israel, from France, and all over the European Union in Eastern Europe. There are also people from as far away as India. I was just talking with Mehta Patkar from India, who's been one of the leaders fighting against the Narmada Dam that was financed by the World Bank about 10 years ago.
We're also joined on the phone, Prothap Chatterjee, in Prague, by a guest in Washington, D.C. He is head of the Jobs with Justice campaign, which has helped to coordinate 50 new U.S. city protests today in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thanks, Amy.
Can you tell us what's happening in Washington?
Well, I'm here in downtown Washington. We just had about 400 labor community, religious, student protesters supporting parking lot attendants at Interpark, along with HRE Local 27, who are fighting for the right to organize at Interpark. There's about 400 people picketing peacefully on the sidewalk, and then about 40, 45 people decided to take the street and were arrested just about 10 minutes ago.
Fred Ascarati with Jobs with Justice. Can you talk about the protests all over the country today?
Yeah, I think a broad coalition of groups here in the United States has decided in solidarity with activists in Prague, we would coordinate local actions. We would localize the movement for global justice. So we've got over 60 actions now all over the country happening, taking on local targets. Corporations like, you know, Pfizer Pharmaceuticals in Boston, where folks are protesting them making money off of the AIDS crisis in Africa. Folks are taking on companies like Kohl's, department stores, for their use of sweatshop labor, especially in Nicaragua, where workers there at the Chentex factories are fighting for the right to organize. And then taking on local companies like here in Washington, D.C., Interpark, which is denying workers there the right to organize as well.
Explain Interpark's connection internationally.
They're global, actually, not just a multi, they're a global company. They have workers all over the world, and actually this is part of a global movement to organize workers and give workers a voice at their workplace. Not just here in Washington, D.C., but in different parts of the world as well.
Prothap Chatterjee, as you stand there in Prague, can you explain what has happened to people who have not been allowed in?
Well, about 230 people have been prevented from entering the Czech Republic because their names are on a blacklist, a master list that the Prague police have compiled, presumably with the help of groups like the Federal Bureau of Investigations in the United States. So people from Italy, for example, arrived on a train 2 days ago after a 19-hour standoff on the border because the Czech police wanted to for people to leave the train, and the group Yabasta decided that they were not going to leave unless everybody could go in. But after 19 hours, they decided to come to compromise and if the police would let them in and move forward once they left four people off. But a number of people have been turned away. Some of them, right at the very beginning, in fact, they turned away three cooks from the Netherlands. And it was actually, I guess, probably a good idea in the first place, because these cooks had been feeding thousands of people at the Convergence Center. But they decided that it was a bad public relations move, I guess, and they let them back in. I don't know if you can hear me right now, because I'm actually standing directly under helicopters. It buzzes overhead. And there's a riot cops are gathering around me. I'm actually stuck between three lines of police. I think there's actually an armored personnel carrier actually right down the street now as I stand, and I'm not quite sure what they're planning to do.
Have you been tear gassed?
Myself personally, just a little bit, but mostly they've resorted to water cannons. I don't know if you can hear right now, but I'm actually walking right behind a group of police who are ordering people to leave. And they're marching forward. I'm right behind them.
Well, we're going to keep tabs on you, just listening in the background, Prothop. Chime in when you want to describe what's happening. But in our studio here in New York, we're joined by Lee Sustar, who did not want to be with us today. He wanted to be near you in Prague, the Czech Republic. But he was denied entry to Prague and detained at the airport for 28 hours before he returned. Prothop? He was told by Prague police that he was a threat to state security, public order, and public health. He's a journalist with Socialist Worker newspaper. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you.
Tell us what happened.
I arrived at the airport at 8 a.m. Prague time on Sunday, went to passport control. I was told my name came up on a list, and after spending some time waiting, I was told that I would have to return to New York.
And what list?
That's exactly the question that was never answered. I asked that question for most of the 28 hours that I was in Prague and was never actually told either by anybody at the airport or anybody I reached among U.S. authorities. And I refused to leave their first attempt to deport me at the first day I was there. 28 hours later, they took me in handcuffs and put me on a plane and kept me on handcuffs.
Let's check in with Prothop Chatterjee. Prothop, what's happening? Prothop, can you hear us? Sounds like the police have dogs here. Prothop, can you hear us?
I can. I'm sorry. There were a group of dogs that were surrounding people and barking away, so it was a little hard to hear you. But police dogs with muzzles on them as they slowly try to move the crowd back and out away from the Congress Center.
These dogs ferocious.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Did you ask me a question?
Just asking you to describe what's happening.
Sorry, right. Between the dogs and the helicopters. Could you repeat your question?
I'm just asking you to describe what's happening, but you're doing that, and the dogs
okay,
are
I'm
as well.
I'm on a little street called Setkova, about two blocks from the Congress Center, and people have been gathering here and around the Congress Center since 9 this morning, which is about 6 hours behind you, I guess 3 a.m. your time. And for the last 6.5 hours, they've had the Congress Center surrounded, and the only way people are able to get in is by police escort through buses and barricades. And as the afternoon has carried on and people tried to storm the barricades, the police have moved in with tear gas, with dogs, with armored personnel, unarmored personnel carriers, I guess, and fire engines with water cannons, and they've been periodically dousing people and chasing them down the street to try and get them away from the Congress Center.
Well, again, we're going to keep coming back to you as we hear dogs barking or helicopters whirring. But Lee Sustar, with Socialist Worker, who didn't quite make it inside the capital city, why do you think you were put on a list?
Well, the guards told me informally, said there must have been a list. You were in Seattle, right? And I said, yes. I was arrested there along with other journalists. The charges against me were dropped. The police chief resigned in disgrace, yet I'm somehow on some kind of list and excluded from the country. And actually, I'm not surprised by their attitude, given what I'm just hearing now from the streets of Prague. Take away a couple of barking dogs and a water cannon, this thing sounds exactly like Seattle, where I was among people who were shot with rubber bullets, wooden pellets, military CS gas, chased down by two armored personnel carriers and pursued by helicopters before I was finally rounded up.
How did the Czech police know that you were in Seattle?
Well, that's the key question. I asked that repeatedly. I called the U.S. Embassy duty officer, who said he couldn't do anything about it. when finally the U.S. Embassy opened for business at 9 a.m. check time on Monday. I spoke with Elizabeth Barnett, who is the chief of consular services there, who said, look, there's nothing we can do about it. When Victoria Middleton was asked about this by a number of my colleagues on the ground in Prague, reporters from Czech newspapers, from The Guardian, and so on, she said, well, maybe he is an undesirable alien. We have no way of knowing that. When I spoke to Burnett again and asked about this, she said, well, look, can you prove the charges against you were dropped? So in other words, it was guilty until proven innocent. And I think really we have a throwback to the old police state tactics of the old Stalinist totalitarian regime under a government that's headed by ex-dissidents. And, you know, when I went to Prague in 1990 as a reporter to write about the Velvet Revolution, I was welcomed. I come back today, and presumably, you know, Moscow's influence is now replaced by Washington's, and I find my name is on a blacklist. And there's only one way that could have come about, by some entity within the U.S. government, whether it was the Seattle Police Department, the King County authorities in Washington State, or the FBI. And again, that what I was charged with was simply failure to disperse, a charge that was later dropped. And I'm wondering why it is that something that's the equivalent of a traffic violation it's something that comes up on a level of Interpol international security alert.
Pratap Chatterjee, are you okay? Pratap, are you there? In the background, we can hear the helicopters whirring, the dogs. Pratap? Well, hopefully he's not the target of the dog's wrath. What about the reports that the FBI was giving over lists? Did you get any more information on that, Lee Sestar?
Well, the Jeffrey Donovan, who writes for the Prague Post, which is an English-language paper, a weekly that's going daily, who wrote quite a lengthy article about me that appeared in yesterday in the Czech Republic, says that it's a virtual certainty. They cannot confirm it, but there's a new building staffed by American people from the American government, full of people who, later seen at the U.S. Embassy, identified themselves as FBI agents. And it's kind of common knowledge. And, of course, informally off the record, the guards who periodically harassed me would say that we got the list from the FBI. And while I speak Russian, I can pick up a little Czech. It was clear that they mentioned the FBI several times.
Lee Sestar is a journalist with Socialist Worker, denied entry into Prague and detained at the airport for more than a day. Prothap Chatterjee on the streets of Prague, the Czech Republic, as we can hear the barks heard around the world. Prothap, can you hear us now?
I can, yes.
And what is happening?
Well, there's a standoff. There's a group of, I guess what we would in the U.S. call Black Bloc anarchists, lined up against the police, and they've got some dumpsters overturned, a scene reminiscent of Seattle, and they're urging people to come forward, and it looks like we may have a confrontation, but this could take a little time. Not exactly sure where we're going next. People have put on gas masks. A lot of people are wearing black bandanas. And as you can probably hear, there's dogs barking all around me, police guards with muzzles and police armed with riot gear and backpacks with some kind of... a dog just attacked one of the legal observers. Sorry.
You don't have to apologize for that. But we're going to break for stations to identify themselves. Prothap Chatterjee is Democracy Now! Correspondent in Prague, the Czech Republic. He has long reported on big business, particularly big oil around the world, did that for years for Interpress Service. We're also joined in the studio by Lee Sestar. I want to thank you for being with us, a journalist with Socialist Worker. What were you going to be reporting in the Czech Republic? What was the angle you were going to be taking for your newspaper?
Well, I wanted to go onto the street and see what was happening. There was a counter summit that was organized for several days previous. That was what I was initially planning to attend, to interview a number of prominent critics of the IMF. And really, the scene that Prothap is describing, I think, shows the hypocrisy of the operation that's being carried out by the Czech government. Václav Havel, using his authority as a dissident and as a kind of as the conscience of political leadership in Europe, actually hosted a meeting, a high-level meeting. They had, I think, among the attendees, George Soros, the financier, James Wolfensohn, head of the World Bank, and a number of people from some of the NGOs. And he opened up the stadium and said, protesters are welcome. And now we see what kind of welcome that people are getting. They're getting the kind of welcome that the Prague Spring dissidents back in 1968 got, the kind of crackdown that led people like Havel to be thrown in jail, be put under house arrest for years. And I find it particularly ironic that Vaclav Havel, whose Samizdat, publications were smuggled out and published here in the West for a small dissident newspaper magazine, New Politics, to which I've also contributed, now finds himself presiding over this. I suppose it shouldn't become as too great a surprise, given that he was also an apologist for NATO's war that we heard about just a few minutes ago from your previous report from from Yugoslavia.
And you are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We're going to go back to the streets with Prothap Chatterjee. Lee Sestar in the studio with us. So we're going to go to the streets of Washington as well, where we were just speaking with the head of the Jobs with Justice campaign, Fred Ascarati, protests in 60 cities around this country. And we're going to be joined by people from Poland as well as other places. You're listening to Democracy Now! Back in a minute. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue with the protests in the streets in Prague, the Czech Republic, as well as here in the United States, we're joined on the telephone right now by several people who are standing by. Among them, we have with us Pavel Tribble, who is with Hnutí Duha, Friends of the Earth Czech Republic, organized the Convergence Center, where people have come from all over, mostly Europeans, though. Welcome to Democracy Now! Pavel Tribble, are you there? Pavel Tribble, can you hear us? Pavel Tribble, can you hear us? Let me see if Peter Slobil is with us from Hungary, Bankwatch Network. Can you hear us?
Hello, here is Peter Slobil. I hear you quite well.
Ah, very good. Can you tell us where you are right now?
I'm right now in a city library where we organize a public forum under the name A Different Message, which is the debate forum on the different aspects of the World Bank and IMF investment. And actually right now it's going discussion between the NGOs and the inspection panel of the World Bank on the role of inspection panel and about various problematic projects of World Bank.
Can you describe why you've come from Hungary?
Well, we bring here people not only from Hungary, but we bring here people from the whole Central and Eastern Europe to give them a chance to speak about the impacts of these old bank projects on the environment or the social issues in East European countries. And we bring more than 70 different NGOs. And we already had a number of meetings between the World Bank and NGOs discussing various problematic projects. One especially is the gold mining in Kyrgyzstan. The gold mine is called Kumtor. And the project, it was highly problematic. 2 years ago, there was a large accident which involved cyanide spill. And several hundreds of people was hospitalized because they were poisoned. There was several deaths reported. And basically NGOs from Kyrgyzstan here raising the issue how the people will be compensated, how the World Bank will ensure higher environmental standards, etc., etc.
Peter Slobil of Hungary, your group, Bankwatch Network, a network of 15 countries in Central Europe that work day to day on the World Bank. You've been in on the Congress yourself. How does what's going on outside affect what's happening inside?
Well, I think it's here outside, we trying to outreach to Czech public, to give them better information, what is the World Bank and what they are doing. The reason why we are doing is that World Bank was never very active in Czech Republic, and so the people actually do not have enough information to create their view. And also, we would like to give to the international NGOs and the international public a chances to ask various academicians, various experts, especially from developing countries, what are the problems and what solutions and what changes are needed in developing an IMF, in their investment, in their structure, and what kind of reforms this institution needs.
We're also joined on the telephone, Peter Slobil from Hungary, the Bankwatch Network, by Pavel Tribel. Pavel is with Friends of the Earth, Czech Republic. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Very good. Okay. Can you tell us where you are right now?
At the moment, I'm at the press center, but I just came from a different message public forum, which is a discussing activity organized by Friends of the Earth, CE Bankwatch Network, and Jubilee 2000 in Prague.
Are you participating in the street protests?
Well, in fact, we are pretty busy with our discussion forum, and we are fully supporting the nonviolent ways of protest. But at the moment, as far as we hear from the media, there are some problems and some groups they misuse the possibility to demonstrate to violent clashes with police. So this is something which we definitely are not very happy about.
Can you explain that further? You were breaking up a bit. Can you explain that further? You're breaking up a bit. Why you're not in the street as a Czech citizen?
Basically, we target our discussions on to the Czech society, which so far doesn't take care so much about the financial institutions and about the problems they are causing. So we rather focus on educating people and on showing them that there are really important reasons to criticize them and to lead advocacy activities to reform them, rather than to focus on demonstrations, because while the demonstrations are absolutely logic, it's normal that people want to express their feelings to the institutions.
You're breaking up, Pavel Tribel. Again, he is from the Czech Republic, distancing himself from the protesters, though concerned about the issues of the World Bank and the IMF. We're also joined on the streets of Washington, D.C. by Joki Jehu, who is executive director of the 50 Years is Enough campaign, though she's not in the Czech Republic right now. Can you tell us where you are, Joki?
I'm on the streets of Washington, D.C., on L Street by 20th Street Northwest, where we have just completed a morning picket line and civil disobedience in support of parking lot attendance with Local 27 here in Washington, D.C.
And what's the connection to the World Bank and the IMF?
The connection is that Interparking is part of a multinational real estate conglomerate, and in fact, the company has parking lots in The Hague and in Brussels as well. And the call for the September 26th actions was to localize the movement for global justice, and the kind of union busting that we have seen, the kind of no good faith bargaining efforts on the part of Interparking are very much like what we have seen around the world, where the IMF and the World Bank have been pushing for what they call labor market flexibility. And so the people here in Washington, D.C. wanted to make the connections between our struggles for justice for workers around the world with the struggle of workers here in Washington, D.C.
And what about connections to the African continent? You're originally from Kenya?
Yes. Now, the interesting thing is that most of the workers who are working for Interparking here in Washington, D.C., many of those workers are from Ethiopia, from Eritrea, and some Latin Americans. They're people who left their countries, some of them trying to make a better life for their families. And they find that when they come here, the jobs that are available for them are these kinds of jobs, working in a parking lot, where because the company is not willing to negotiate with the union, they're still not able to get the best kind of job contract that they can. They are not able to get the kind of salaries that they need in order to support their family. So you see people escaping because of structural adjustment programs, the lack of jobs, the lack of the opportunities to make a livelihood for their families. They come here, and the same kinds of policies are affecting them here. We have seen over and over in the U.S. privatization. We have seen the policies like welfare reform, which are affecting poor people and working people, and they're very much part of the trickle-down economic model that the World Bank and the IMF has been pushing around the world, and now it's coming home to roost in the United States, and people are really rising up and saying, this is about an economic model that does not support us, and we are going to protest it here and around the world.
Jokey Jehu of 50 Years is Enough campaign. We're also joined in the studio by a reporter from the Socialist Worker who was deported from the Czech Republic, Lisa Star, not allowed in to cover what was happening there. As you were just listening to Pavel Tribble and Peter Slobil, Pavel Tribble, from the Czech Republic, not participating in the protests. You've been speaking with Czech reporters. What is your sense of what people are doing in Czechoslovakia, in the Czech Republic?
Yeah, Mikhail Mosil of Ludyny Noviny, who wrote a page two story about my impending deportation, explained to me that a lot of people are sensitive to the fact that, you know, this is a tourist town, we make a lot of money, and that while there's enormous bitterness about the free market policies that have been pursued for the last 10 years, because you're living in an ex-Stalinist country, the question of protest and opposition and opposing to the free market is something that's still quite distant from people. And so the challenge, I think, for the protesters is to try to find some sort of connection to that. And I think that that's really the reason why some of the people appear to have standed off. That's not a reason not to protest at all, but it's really a part and parcel of saying that the international effort that's taking place here has to reach out to people in these sorts of societies.
I'm going to see if Pavel Tribble is still with us from Friends of the Earth Czech Republic in Prague. Are you there, Pavel?
Yeah, I'm here.
How are the protesters being portrayed in the Czech newspapers?
Well, basically, there was a big hysteria created from the very beginning by the Czech authorities about the Seattle 2000, which the Prague was called in this way. And basically, there is very superficial reporting on what actually the critiques of the World Bank and IMF look like and what is their expertise. They simply focus on this very visible protest, which, of course, do not bring the very concrete picture on what it is that is criticized on the institutions. The message which you can send via demonstrations is rather the general one. also this is also the level on which the Czech media work, because there is so far no tradition of serious reporting as it is usual in Western countries, for example.
Mm-hmm. Pavel Tribble of Friends of the Earth, Czech Republic. What about World Bank loans to your government? What have they done?
Well, basically, there was no big World Bank involvement in the Czech Republic with the loans, also because not only that the Czech Republic doesn't need money from the World Bank, in fact, but also that our former governments, they didn't like the Bretton Woods institutions that much, and they wanted to do their policies themselves.
What about the Temelin nuclear power plant?
Yeah, well, this is the loan which has some connection to the Temelin, but the biggest part of the loan went for the desulfurization of the old plants. The lignite,
went for what?
Coal, of the old lignite coal power plant. And this project is somewhat problematic from the typical point of view from the World Bank, that it doesn't take care how actually the money of its loans are used and whether the criteria are being fulfilled. So despite the fact that the company who got the loan, which is backed by the state guarantees, however, the company doesn't keep half of the financial criteria, the World Bank still says that this is the one of the best projects in the region they ever financed. And they are simply relying on the World Bank guarantees, and they do not take care of whether the loan itself makes sense. So this is one of the things we can criticize on the World Bank in the 90s in the Czech Republic, but otherwise it wasn't involved in any significant activity here.
Peter Slobel, what will you take back from these protests in Prague to Hungary and the organization you work with, the Bankwatch Network?
Well, I think it's one of the learning which we have, or one of the lessons which we got, is that Czech media actually is far less interested in the concrete issues as the international journalists. So we need more work. We need to offer more information to the public all around of Eastern Europe about the World Bank and the other multilateral development banks' activities in the region. And we need to try to more closely work with the local communities, give them more ideas how they can use their rights, which they have within those institutions, to protect themselves, to protect their social situation, to protect the environment around them.
Last word to Prothap Chatterjee, who is standing by on the streets of the Czech Republic. What's happening there, Prothap? We have 10 seconds.
I'm standing actually right next to a fire engine and an armored personnel carrier, and they're getting ready to soak the crowd. I'm behind about 100 policemen, I would say, and they're facing off with the anarchists, and they're getting ready, actually, as we speak, to soak them with water. And
well, Prothap, I want to thank you for being with us. Peter Slobel of Hungary, Pavel Tribble of Czech Republic, Joki Jehu in the streets of Washington. Thank you all. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.